This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hi there and welcome. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. As time marches onward, many of us over the age of 55 are looking to the next generation of the blues for leadership. Someone to step forward, separate themselves from the pack, and take the blues to the next level. Buddy Guy, Muddy Waters, and Little Walter, and so many others were of a caliber to do just that. And as we lose that generation on a too regular basis, we must look to the younger musicians. Well, I'm pleased to say I know of at least one young blues man who is making a name for himself simply by showing his resolve to his mission to reinvigorate today's blues with the spirit of the past. Don't believe me? Check out his website. It says so. But more importantly, he's earned the respect of the likes of Taj Mahal, who refers to him as my wonder boy, and calling him a great new voice of the 21st century of the acoustic blues. Now, if you're not familiar with John Tavius Willis yet, get ready because you're about to meet him here. John Tavius Willis, come on in, man, and welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, man. And I have to tell you, I really enjoy your delivery and your style. That old school blues sound just never gets old to me. But I have to ask you about your earliest memories of music as we kick this off, man. Talk about that for a minute, would you please?
Yeah, the earliest memories of music I have is in church. You know, I'm about 3 years old singing and with my grandfather in church. And then I eventually went to piano about 7 years old. I was okay with it, but it felt more like homework because, you know, I was learning music and I was doing good too. But I later found out like the improv and that kind of thing was more of my jam. And then I went from piano to trombone at about, 10, 11. And then 14 years old, I got guitar. Then 17 years old, I started playing harmonica. And 18, I started playing banjo. And I'm still playing the latter three.
Okay. Now, you talked about starting off singing with your grandfather at the Mount Pilgrim Baptist Church at the age of three. What were you doing? Were you singing, just singing little tunes with your grandfather? Is that what you were doing?
I was singing gospel songs. I mean, I guess they were little tunes in the sense of I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what, I was probably baptized around the same time I was singing. So I, didn't know what baptism was. I wasn't thinking about dying, but I knew I was singing about heaven and all that good stuff. So in the sense of little tune, because I was a little kid, yeah, but it was songs of old songs, just the older the blues is, and where I'm from, the gospel songs, this is a serious part of the gospel belt, and church was, definitely was, kind of is now, but with the bedrock of my life. I used to take my grandmama and granddad to church all the time when they stopped driving. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man, we were just doing gospel songs, And my church, they're not the shouting kind of Christians. They moan and cry kind of somber. It wasn't, that's kind of church I grew up in.
Okay. Now, at the age of 14, you stumbled upon that video, and I have to have you talk about that because it would forever mold and shape your outlook on music, didn't it?
Yeah. That video of Muddy Water made me want to play guitar. I was already listening to blues. I started listening to blues a couple of years prior. Like, prior to that, I was listening to popular music, listening to the radio. I still listen to the radio, but I was going out and buying CDs and stuff then. But once I heard Muddy Water, there was no turning back. It reminded me of other stuff that I loved about church, but it was like another side of it. And it was something that I would delve into musically, historically, and have really enjoyed it and have been good to me, and I think I've been good to it and practicing the music and teaching it to other young folks and teaching the history and so forth and so on.
Yes, sir. Now, opportunity presented itself in the form of an invitation by the legendary blues man Taj Mahal when he invited you to accompany him on stage in 2015. If my math is correct, you were about 19. Is that about right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how did you guys meet, man?
I always been one of those people that, like, if I just wanted to make something happen, I try to make it happen as much as I can. So I was playing at that point, but I was playing, you know, in a more, you know, Southeast kind of situation. But I called around, really, because B.B. King had passed, and I wanted to interview him and talk to him about some things, because I heard him in an interview that when he was growing up, he listened to his auntie's Victrola, and he used to listen to Barbecue Bob. And I was like, damn, B.B. King? Listen to Barbecue Bob. Like, you think like that. You don't think that somebody that was a pivotal force in blues from really from the 50s on, you know, but especially from the 70s on, would listen to somebody as obscure to so many people as Barbecue Bob, who only had a recording career for 5 years from 1927 to 31. And for him saying, listen to Barbecue Bob, I was just interested in like all the good music that a good blues music he had listened to. But sad when he passed, so I started calling people around and was like, yeah, I'm a blues musician. I play, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm a blues musician. I play blah, blah, blah. Now, see, now I'm telling you, you know, it almost, you know, lines up. I think B.B. King died May of 2015, and I met Tom Hall in August of 2015. But I called around, called the Music Maker Relief Foundation, and they told me that I could meet some elder musicians, the Boo Hanks, from Virginia. I think he was born 1930. And I met Mr. John D. Holman, another fellow that had influenced Taj Mahal when he stayed in North Carolina for a while. Mr. John D. was born. And I met him, and then CEO, founder of Music Maker Foundation, Tim Duffy, he said, I got somebody on the phone here for you. And Taj was like, I've been waiting for you. So, like, you know, and that was it. And the week after that, I think he was playing in Atlanta. I took one of my musical partners up there with me, and my father took us up there, rather, to Piedmont Park, and he called me on stage with him and John Hyatt playing. And, yeah, man, I had never played in front of that many people before, you know, maybe 200, you know, because that's how I started playing music. I called somebody. I called the festival, and they told me I could play, and it was in 2012. And they told me they could give me no money, but they ended up paying me $350 for three songs. So, you know, like, me and my cousin went and we played. So, like, me calling people and doing stuff was the way that I done got, you know, I don't mind calling. You know, a text is cool. Right. My grandma, you can tell my bad grandma when I'm talking, but you can really see my bad grandma when I'm texting. So, but I got in contact with Taj, and we talked, and I met him. And at Piedmont Park, he called me on stage for two songs. I did Loose and Made Blues by Frankie Lee Sims, and then I did Key to the Highway by, the Big Bill Bruisey version of it. So, yeah, that was it. And then after that, all the emails I had sent to people about shows and festivals, they got returned somehow, you know? That was it.
So in 2018, Taj Mahal goes out and starts touring, Taj Mahal and Keb Mo. And by the way, I just got to see them about 2 weeks ago. And man, what an incredible show. But here you go, man. You get called out with them and start touring with them in 2018. Talk about busting out hard, man. What was that opportunity like for you, John Tavius?
It was great. And I toured with them, really, I think 2017, 2018, and summer 2019. But I toured with Taj in the beginning of 2017 by like three shows I did with him in 2017. It was all in Florida, so it wasn't too far. I told my professor, because at the time I was going to college, and I graduated college too, but I told him, you know, I'm not going to be here. I didn't ask him nothing. I was like, I'm not being here. I don't know what they're going to have to do with anything, but I'm performing, and I'm, you know, I'll show you some pictures when I get back. That worked like 9 out of 10 times, though, like, you know, that because they found out I wasn't lying. But it was great. I opened with Taj first. Taj introduced me to Kev. They did the joint tour. I was kind of nervous about driving all, well, not kind of nervous. I was nervous about driving all over the United States. And I told them that was like my only holdup. Taj Mahal promised that he would look out for me, and he let me on his bus. Like, my relationship with them, I feel like, is more than just music. You know, I always listen and look and just how to be, you know, a community. Cause that's what the music is about, is being a community and keeping the history alive and all that good stuff. And not doing it just from a like a museum piece standpoint, but like taking it, applying it, and then doing your own stuff. But I did 3 shows with Taj in Florida. My dad took me down there, so it was pretty easy. And I just told my professor that I wasn't gonna be in class. I didn't ask him. I was just like, hey, I'm not gonna be here. I'll see you. I take a picture and I bring it to you to prove that I was there, and they worked like 9 out of 10 of the time. And then Taj introduced me to Kev. They did a joint tour, the Taj Mo tour. And I told them my problem, I couldn't drive all over the United States. Like that, you know, they were going all kind of places. So they ended up, Taj ended up letting me stay in his bus. And I eventually got to be a cool kid, and they invited me over to I was a cool kid on Taj, but don't get me wrong. But it just wasn't a lot of people on his bus. All the people was on Kev, but so I ended up hanging out with everybody, meeting everybody, and man, you know, that led them co-produce my next album. And I went everywhere with them. We did Central Park, Orpheum Theater in New Orleans, the Ryman Theater. We did the Austin City Limits. We did Pabst Theater. A lot of these big places that I probably never go to again, but I enjoyed it, and it was fun, and I made a lot of lifelong fans that still follow me today.
Nice. Now, Blue Metamorphosis came out in 2016, and you won the International Blues Challenge Award for Best Self-Produced CD in 2018. That had to just be a dream come true for you, wasn't it?
Man, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to keep it for real. I wasn't even expecting it. Somebody told me from the Atlanta Blues Society that I should just enter it, and I entered it. I didn't know that, you know, I didn't think nothing of it, really. And then I got a call in January of 2018, and they were like, hey, you won. Where you at in Memphis? I'm like, I'm not in Memphis. I'm in Columbia, Georgia. But yeah, I won it, and then it came with a little prize. So I was like, yeah, that was cool, man. It was nice. It was nice, you know. I done got a few little accolades, but man, you know, they come and go, and it's good to have, but at the same time, you can't let it dilute your progress as a musician, because sometimes you can kind of get stuck on those accolades. But a lot of people, they want those accolades, and that's the only time that you can kind of book a show unless you mentioned, you know, all the accolades and stuff, and it kind of sometimes go before the music. But in almost ever since, every musician that I listen to, they never got nothing. You know, like all the ones I listen to, you know, maybe they got the Blues Hall of Fame eventually, but you have to work for the music. But yeah, it's a dream come true to me to be able to create something that I love and live in something that I love and be able to share something I love and have people receive it and give me back the same energy and sometimes more energy than what I give them. And I think that's like the ongoing dream. Like no matter, you know, whatever ups and downs or whatever accolades I get, I feel like that's like the ultimate prize, is being able to have an audience that is just excited as you are, you know?
Yes, sir. Well, Jontavious, you said that when you play the blues, you are connecting to those before you and presenting it to others, a spiritual type of thing. Now, this is not the first time I've heard something similar from African-American blues musicians, and I truly believe that it is a spiritual type of thing. Paul Auster said it best, I think. He said of you, when I heard him play, I said to myself, this is how the blues, as I know it, is going to stay alive. And I got to tell you, man, I get goosebumps talking about this because that's pretty high praise, especially considering that he toured with Muddy Waters, Louisiana Red, many others. Does this help you stay grounded a little bit and stay true to your mission?
I don't know if I think of it that way, but I do know as I have grown, I have found out that it's more responsibility than just being an entertainer, you know? A lot of, because there have been so many of our forefathers that were just entertainers. And then, you know, and I think it's just so many things that can, you know, just like I put on a festival. I got a little festival that I started about, it'll be 6 years next year. I'm the artistic director at this acoustic blues festival going on 7 years. I've turned a lot of blues musicians, young blues musicians on to good old blues. To me, it ain't about it being so much of a contest versus it being so much about reintroducing a lot of black folks, but I don't influence other folk more than black folk, but I try to get a lot of the young black folk to like, just black folks in general, I ain't gonna say young, cause to really understand like how powerful the blues is. I was talking to a fella yesterday that's an ethnomusicologist and have been since the 60s, and he was saying, like, you know, during the time of the 1890s to the 1910s was the explosion of African-American, I say black, but black music as it had ever been. And I think the reason that it was because people were so focused on, like, putting their truth out, putting their energy into their music versus competition. A lot of those folks never even recorded that with the folks that were the inventors of these music. But I think what keep me grounded is knowing that it's bigger than me. You know, what keep me grounded is knowing that now, don't get me wrong, I still want my peace. You know what I'm saying? And I still am human. I still have an ego. I still have all this stuff. But at the end of the day, man, truly and honest, my heart, I would say this before God, I do this because I love it and I want to see more black people get involved. I have made sure, even during COVID, to try to put shows together that would pay folks that weren't getting paid, you know? I wasn't getting paid, but I would split my money with other people too, because I think that's the goal, man. If you look at Muddy Water and Lil Walter and a lot of them guys, people listen to that music, they don't realize them guys drunk together, they ate together, they slept together. I mean, I slept, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? And they traveled together. And they were more than just people that played music for hobby. They were family. And so that's why that music sounds like that. It's community music. But now it's everybody's chasing the dead man. You know, everybody chasing. I like the sound of the dead people, but I also can show you, especially with my live record, what part of the music is me? What part of the music is an extension of me? So it's me holding back and me also pushing forward. Like, you know, so I think that's a big thing, because when you have such a catalog of music and thousands of songs, sometimes you can get lost in that and you can just spend your time replicating. You know, I can sound like this person and this person and this person, but it's not classical music. It was never meant to be classical music, because you can listen to three of these songs and they're completely different songs. You know what I'm saying? It's the same song, but the artists are playing it completely different. So I think what really keeps me grounded is knowing that it's bigger than just music, and knowing that it's changing. Like, it's a lot of young black folk playing the blues. It's a lot of young black folk that really into the history. It's a lot of young black folk that's playing the old school blues too. And when I say old school, not necessarily a style, but that same feeling that it evokes, they're able to bring that feeling now. And people can't say, they like, oh man, you're channeling such and such. Oh man, your old soul. That's just the way that how that stuff is just in it, you know. It's right there next to the heart. It's the soul, you know. And I feel like you know, that what makes it all good. And I feel like that music represents my people. I know it represents my people. The gospel and the blues represent my folks. My folks is a good mix of sanctified and hellified, you know. Those are the people I come from. I lost my great grandmother yesterday. She was 101 years old. She would have been 102 July 28th. Wow. I interviewed her and talked to her quite a bit, but she was one of those people like that. Most of her repertoire was gospel song, but most of her stories were secular, you know. But that's the kind of thing, you know. Yeah, we just born in it, so you have to be rooted. You got to be grounded, because you coming from it, you coming up out the ground, you got to be rooted, you know. You can't elevate it and try to get too high, but I don't never see my music as rock star music. See, some people want to be rock stars and want to be pop stars. That ain't never been my goal. If I'm ever to make a good living and also help others, and I think that's the good goal in music, and not get wrapped up with all the other stuff. I write my songs, and yeah, man, I ain't gonna go on and on and on. I feel like there's a lot of things that get me grounded, and yes, that is one.
Well, first of all, let me say my condolences to you and to your family, John Tavius.
No problem.
Your great grandmother. It seems like when they're around for anywhere from 90 to 100 years and on, it just gets harder to let them go when they go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Yeah, she's been here for a minute, man. But yeah, we knew it was going to be sad. But everybody, you know, they ain't carrying on too bad, you know, because 100,
well,
we can
it's
only.
It's a celebration, man.
Yeah,
that's a life, brother.
That is a life, man. We can
that's
only
a
hope.
Life.
We can only hope to live to be 100 anything. So it's a blessing. Her mama was 98, her stepdad was 105.
Wow.
She lived to be 101, so shoot, man.
She came from good stock, that's for sure. Hey, I want to flip the page here, John Tavius. Your latest album, West Georgia Blues, seems to be a continuation of the mission we just discussed. Am I correct there?
Yeah, so you are, yes, sir.
And talk about this album for just a minute. I mean, you really seem to be coming into your own on this one. And more than that, you truly seem to be having a good time on this album as well.
Yeah, I wanted, you know, the one before this one was the one that was produced by Kev and executive produced by Todd and Paul. And I just wanted to do something myself. And I felt like I had learned enough. It was 5 years between Spectacular Class and Where's Georgia Blues. And I wanted to make a statement too that, like, you know, people always say, well, you know, this Delta blues, that's Texas blues. And those are styles and stuff that were given by the white ethnomusicology, which is okay. Because I feel like you do need to have different genres and subcategories, but that stuff only really works for back in the day. Because now you got folk that can go online and learn and or listen, you know, and hardly anybody listen to record, but they can go online and look at a tutorial and make tutorials and learn what is Delta blues and learn what is Piedmont blues and replicate it all across the world. So the only way I feel like I can truly say I play West Georgia blues because I'm from West Georgia. Yes, I can play in the style of Charlie Patton or Blind Lemon Jefferson or Robert Johnson or Barbecue Bob, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, I am from West Georgia, and the blues I am presenting is West Georgia blues. And I did various keys in this recording. I did various styles of blues in this recording, which I kind of do in all. I always try to make sure I do a ragtime. I try to make sure I do a little slide and some band stuff, you know. The band is not my strong suit, but I do like to have a good time with the band and have had a good time performing with the band.
Very cool. Well, from the looks of your tour schedule, it looks like you've got some dates on the East Coast in the books, and then you're going to be going out west and back to Telluride in September, and then off to Flagstaff. But in the meantime, where can we send folks to learn more about you, maybe buy some merch or some CDs, or book you for a gig and help fill your calendar up?
Yeah, man. Well, if you want to know anything about me and book me and find the music links, you can go to JohnTaviousWillis.com or just JohnTavious.com. It'll take you there too. And that's JohnTaviousWillis. Willis, WILLIS.com. That's JohnTaviousWillis.com. And you can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm pretty active on my Facebook page. I like to put up the historical posts. I've been doing that for a little while, probably since 2015. But yeah, I'll be in all those places. And if I'm in a city or town near you, come check me out.
And I'll tell you what, I would love to see you show up in the Michigan area or around Michigan close by. We'll have to keep an eye out for you.
But John Tavious, what part of Michigan you in, brother?
We're over by Lansing, right in the center of the Lower Peninsula.
Okay.
Yep. And I have to put a bug in the ear of the people that put the Blues Fest together for next year. Maybe we can give you a call and get you to come out and join us.
That would be great.
That'd be fun. Well, John Tavious Willis, it has been a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time today and joining me on Time Signatures. I wish you continued success. Keep the growth going. And I hope to see you in or near Michigan soon. And anytime you have a new album to promote or a tour, you be sure to reach out to me. You always have an open door here and a microphone anytime you need it, okay?
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Brother Jim. You're a great interviewer. And thank you, man, for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures with Jim Irvin. Again, my thanks to John Tavious Willis, but also to you, for without you, none of this is possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.